always prided myself on being quite articulate. I say that a lot, don't I? But I'm realising that actually, although yes, I do have the ability to talk and grasp and utilise vocabulary, I absolutely am not as good at communicating as I believed myself to be. I think I'm good at communicating, and I think in an information and educational sense, and I mistook that for being really good at communicating. So I always thought that I was really good at this intra and interpersonal communication, genuinely, from a course I did when I was about 15, or I think I was 16. I must have turned 16 by that point to be in college, so yes. But at the age of 16, I did a course where we actually did do a module on communication, and I really found myself quite good at it. But I'm realising that, again, it wasn't necessarily in everyday life where I was good at it. I'm just good at kind of learning the rules and regurgitating, or being able to discuss and describe them. But being able to apply them into my life, not quite the same. Now, there are many, many things in my life where I've actually been very good at communicating, like over telephone, through a business, that kind of thing. I do say that I go into performer mode quite a lot. And I actually can't believe how much of that is true of my past. So it's not because I'm false. Again, I've been accused of that before, and it isn't false. I actually am quite friendly and I'm quite bubbly. But all of these things take their toll on me, if that makes sense. But over the years, I've learned how to behave and therefore how to be accepted to a point, and, you know, for how to get people to kind of like me, I suppose. But I've said before, no one ever likes me for long. And I think that's because although I am bubbly and friendly, and at first I can talk about things and make jokes and have a really good kind of time with people, I'm also very serious. There's a very serious side to me. And my husband and I were talking the other day about this. We talk a lot. We have a lot of communication between us, but most of our communication, well, it's never small talk. We're always talking shop. So he actually described it as information exchange. And I think it's the most apt way to describe how we speak to one another and actually how we speak to other people. I can engage in small talk. It's just not something I'm really fond of. I don't mind the odd thing. But definitely mine is all about the stuff that's in my head that is forever looping, or the learning I've done, or my interests. They are forever there, and they are at the tip of my tongue, and I bore people. The worst part is I've over the years learned that people are getting bored, but I still can't kind of stop or disengage, or that magical A word that I don't like. It will make me anxious, and then I kind of get worse. I waffle more, and then these people develop not very nice ideas about you, and often are not very nice to you. And then you feel like people start to phase you out of their interactions. And I've had so many friendships kind of turn toxic, and I don't mean they've all been volatile. Some have, but generally speaking, it's more that you just start to get isolated, and they freeze you out. And that's happened to me so many times, and it's quite disturbing because you don't understand why. And it's happened with friends where I've given literally everything, and then you think, why do they not value my friendship the way I valued theirs? But it's because you communicate differently and you don't give to them, I think, the things that they need. So for example, in my case, I give a lot of emotional support whenever any friend has been in need, or family member, but I'm not good at, do you want to come to a concert with me? No, thank you. Do you want to go out and do this together? No, thank you. Come on holiday with us? No, thank you. And people start to feel rejected. For so many years, I've done things that took me so outside of my comfort zone to keep people happy and also to fit in. So you've got different kind of objectives from it. And often it was actually because I'm a people pleaser. So it was, you know, for that reason. I remember going to a concert once because somebody at college wanted to go and had no one to go with. And I hated concerts and I didn't even know this band. And I paid for a ticket and went with this person just so they'd get to go. Because the idea of them missing out on this experience really bothered me. So I think, you know, when I say I'm a kind person, that wasn't for any other, that wasn't me thinking, oh, if I do this, she'll think, which is what I got accused of later down the line, not by this individual, but other people, they saw it as a selfish act because they felt I was doing it in some way to get this acclaim and for people to go, wow, isn't she lovely? And that didn't even cross my mind. It literally was to make this person happy. That is literally what my objectives have always been from very young. I think it started literally from the first time my mum kind of taught me to share a sweet or something like that. And I remember not really wanting to, but then that feeling when I shared it and how grateful they were and just being able to bring that happiness to somebody, that's quite addictive. And I've been like that through my whole life, really. I used to be quite selfless. I wouldn't say that I am so much now. Things have changed in my life, and obviously I have a lot of my own challenges with my health and the children and all that kind of thing. But definitely when I was younger, I did things for other people all the time, and I would do anything for anyone. If someone called me and needed me to do something, I would get in my car and go and do it. And you are probably already developing an idea here that I was used a lot. People saw this, and I didn't really attract nice people. There are a lot of stories I could tell you, but they'd be so identifiable, and sometimes that can't be avoided, but there are some things I don't feel comfortable sharing because they are so identifiable. It will identify me and the children, obviously, and also the individuals. But there are things where I've been totally used, and I will just use this example, and again, it's awful, but I used to have a friend who had children and they would use the children. So they would say, oh, we need this. Could you give us some money? We need this for the children. And I would give them money. And I didn't have a lot of money. I wasn't working in a very well-paid job at the time. But, you know, I'd pop to the shop and do anything for them and take them here, there and everywhere. And it took so many years, actually, but I then realised they were using me, and that was a really hurtful moment. And I've said before, this is where people say, oh, you're so high functioning. And I know that we reject these terms, and I'm not somebody who uses these terms, but this is what people say to me. You're so high functioning. You're not as impacted by your autism. You don't deserve to be assessed on the NHS, which is why I went private. I was told that they wouldn't take it seriously. Not because they don't believe it, just they don't have the resources. And unless I'm really, really impacted in my life, I just didn't deserve or could not be accommodated in that system. And I get what they're saying to a degree, because there are some people who have so many more difficulties than me from being autistic. The frustration for me, though, is that it completely undermines the challenges I have. I've shared some before. As always, there will be overlaps and I will repeat content. But this, for me, is one of the biggest things that has impacted my life. It is this social ineptness, if that's the word, my inability, my naivety, my vulnerability. I've told you before that I've had motives questioned. I've had people impose things upon me and, you know, say that I've meant things I haven't meant, and they've used this as just cause to treat me in the most deplorable ways. And they've tainted other people's opinions of me when actually it was wrong. And I know, to a point, I look back and think I can see how maybe sometimes I came across how they painted me and perceived me, because I'm quite blunt, I'm quite literal, very honest. And I've explained before, I was very rule driven when I was young. So for example, when you're at school and you learn that, you know, the best way to go about life is to get married, have a mortgage, and then have a baby. That's, you know, it's very interesting because I also now identify as potentially meeting the PDA profile. And that sounds as far from that as possible, but actually I'm learning about how it can present differently in different people. And I was definitely the people pleaser kind of presentation. So I can't remember where I got to there. But essentially, to kind of say people like me are not impacted is really unfair. And I can't speak for every autistic person, but I can speak for myself and for people who present like me. And I was having a discussion actually just over the last week with a GP. And I was explaining that, you know, they have probably treated a lot more autistic people than they realise. It's just that we don't all present, obviously. But often what will happen is we get misdiagnosed with the wrong A word. Their conclusion is never autism. And why would it be based on what they know about it? And, you know, from the short time they're around us. But they're very quick to use the other A word, which is anxiety. And what they don't realise is this is quite self-perpetuating, because you call somebody anxious and it makes them anxious, and they will likely exhibit that behaviour all the more every time you see them. And this was certainly the case for me. For years I was going to the doctors with these conditions, and I then found out that anxious had been used as a term to describe me when I saw a doctor who very quickly stopped taking me very seriously. And it appeared it's because this anxious note was on my file. And when I actually challenged my regular GP about it, I said, you know, what makes you think I'm anxious? And he said, well, you don't make eye contact, you have a list of ailments, and you talk very fast. These were all true things. Actually, these were things I did anyway. And I actually said to him, do you know what? I'm actually a teacher and I do talk a lot. I'm a talker and always have been. I've been quite an eccentric person my whole life. Eye contact I can do, but it does make me feel uneasy staring at somebody for a long time. And in that setting, I was anxious, but I was anxious because I could feel that vibe that he wasn't really taking what I was saying to him very seriously. Add to that the whole, and I'm going to use the A word here, the whole anxiety and stress as an autistic person of going into a GP surgery. Like, you know, for me, it's the getting there. I'm already heightened. Having to keep practicing in your head what you're going to say because I lose my words. I struggle with processing what they're asking me. I'm really bad at following instructions when I'm in that setting. It's like, again, I do present as anxious, so he's not wrong to have picked that up to a point, but they don't question why. I'm not just going in because I'm anxious. That's kind of a byproduct of everything else. And I just feel like sometimes they're too quick to go straight there. I was told I had white coat syndrome, which is, you know, when you get anxious about seeing a doctor and say, for example, they take your blood pressure, it's likely to be higher because you're already stressed. But they see that as this weakness, and that then everything you say and do after that point is not to be believed because you're just anxious. So every time you have any symptom, it's because you're suffering from anxiety. And again, this just creates more anxiety and the cycle continues. And this is what happened to me. As a child, I had a lot of immune issues. And I was poorly an awful lot, and I won't go into great detail, but my mum used to take me to the doctors a lot, and they'd make jokes about how I needed a bed down there and that kind of thing. And I think they'd already kind of pegged my family as being a bit anxious and being hypochondriacs, which was not the case. We've later found out that the condition I have, it's really common for children to have the symptoms I had as a child. And then it develops into what I now suffer with. So obviously I appreciate science at the time didn't have those answers. But again, it's just so sad how it's so very, very quick to go there. And then we have this buzzword of anxiety. And I feel like over the last probably 5-10 years, I've heard it said so much. Mental health is obviously something that is now on everybody's radar. And that's brilliant. And I've got nothing against supporting people with anxiety, but my doctor dismissed everything I said behind this veil of anxiety. And actually in the early days, I didn't know I was autistic. And then when I realized I was and expressed that, that was disbelieved as well, because I can't be autistic because I have a job. And I've had a relatively successful life and a marriage. And so these are all the things that actually create the anxiety. And I said to this GP that I was speaking to recently, what we really need you to do is to understand the subtleties. It's not always people aren't always going to come into your practice and be overtly autistic. And even if we are exhibiting some of the behaviours that you might associate with autism, you aren't necessarily going to recognise that because they can present as other things, or you might actually, from your own misconceptions and misunderstandings about autism, not recognize that the person is autistic. For example, myself, I have a diagnosis now and still people don't believe it or don't see it and certainly don't accommodate for it. Now this GP, amazing, he said, you know, this is a challenge, and I think that we really need to think about how we can help GPs to recognize this. And that is a challenge, because how do you help these people? And although I've had a really bad experience with some, I have to also say I've had a really good experience with some as well, and I really respect the profession, and that has to be made really clear. They have to know so much, and I'm not asking them to be experts on autism. That's impossible. That's a big ask. But what I would hope is that maybe they question things. So if they have somebody like me, who's a teacher, for example, who goes in and is struggling to convey their symptoms or difficulties, why do they immediately go to the most negative thing that they can think of, and then disregard everything you say to them from there on in? I'm not going to spend too much longer speaking about this, but there is more to say, so this will probably be covered again. But I think what I'm really disputing is there are different settings that bring out different things. And not only have I mentioned the getting there, you've also got the lights, the waiting room, the other people. It's horrid, isn't it? That kind of thing sends me reeling. I watch the other people and they're all kind of normal, if that's the word. They sit there and they don't seem affected. I don't know what's going on inside. Maybe they're just great at masking. But I can't stop moving, and I have to have something in my hands to tap and to fiddle with, and I have to look around. So straight away, how does that present? To them, they're probably thinking, whoa, an anxious wreck, and I'm aware of it, and it just makes my behaviour worse. I now try and prepare the GP as soon as I sit down that I'm autistic and I might come across this way, but do you know, some of them still look at me like, I don't think you are, or they don't really understand what that means to be able to understand, you know, why I'm presenting this way. So there definitely needs to be some education out there around this, and yeah, it's frustrating. I'm hoping that will come into fruition. And then finally, I mentioned earlier about how I think I'm really good at communication, and I'm realizing that I'm not as good as I think. Yes, I can talk, and you know, particularly on things I'm interested in or that kind of stuff. But even talking to you guys, I'm trying to do it off the cuff, which is probably daft. But sometimes, you know, I do not have the capacity and the spoons and the time and everything to sit down and scaffold everything that I need to say. So this is kind of the easiest way for me to do it. And I know it's not so coherent, and I do apologize, but I do hope that there are people like me who at least get something from this or can relate to this, or who can maybe articulate it better than me. I don't know. Maybe take what I've said and make it more coherent. Possibly, I'm not sure. But you know, this is what the space is for, I suppose. The internet, it's for people to be able to share and to vent and to have opinions and to relate. And that's what I really respect about it. There's some bad on the internet. We won't visit that today. But you know, the good stuff is all those things I've mentioned. And I absolutely do respect the place for that. But the communication aspect, I have realised that actually even playing, I thought I was so good at playing, and I thought I was so good at having an imagination, and I've realised that everything I do is actually structured from something. So I can't just sit and invent something. I thought I could, but I now realise like how much I'm mimicking and imitating everything. Now obviously all art is imitation to some degree, so you're going to get that everywhere. But I've just started to realise that how limited my imagination actually is. And it's through playing with the children. I thought, oh, I was so good when I was a teacher playing with the children. But actually, it always wound up being an educational game. Everything I do ends up being educational. And I'm the same with my children. Mum, let's play Pokemon. And obviously I'm home educating a PDAer, so a lot of it has to kind of be that way. So it's probably for the best that I'm built the way I am, where I do this, because he then learns without actually realizing he's learning. So that works. But sometimes I'm not consciously doing it. Sometimes I am. I'm extending the questioning or throwing little things in there to make sure that certain aspects of the curriculum are covered and he doesn't even realize it. But I've actually realized that the majority of the time, it's actually how I play. So my talk is information exchange and my play is educational. So I'm just learning so much about myself every single day, new things, which I can't believe. But no, communication for me is not easy and it has caused so many problems for me and continues to cause problems for me. So to say people like me are not impacted is unfair. Yes, I can go into the world and mask. Yes, I can socialize with people to a degree, but none of this feels natural and all of it takes something from me. It takes something out of me and it is a difficult world to navigate. People will say, but at least you can blend in. I take that on board. I've had that said to me. Well, at least, you know, it's not obvious. At least not everyone's staring at you. Do you know what? That's an odd thing as well. I do get stared at a lot. I remember somebody once saying to me in my family, because I was always so self-conscious and I still am now, and they said, oh my gosh, what is it? Do you think you're beautiful or something? You think everybody's looking at you because they're not. But do you know what? It was never about me thinking I was beautiful. Far from it, actually. But the fact is, I have always felt people staring. And then people say, that's your paranoia. But actually, I have felt people staring and I've seen people doing it and nudging and whispering. And then I found out at one point that, you know, people were talking about me behind my back. And it was something I'd kind of suspected. And it was because of my quirks. It was because of these strange behaviours and these things where I don't fit in. I'll just give you one more example. So a colleague was in hospital, I may have shared before, and all of the staff said, oh, wouldn't it be lovely to go to the hospital and see this person? Now, it wasn't because I didn't want to see this person, but for me, I'd already planned. I was going to be marking my books till a certain time and then going home to do certain jobs. For me, driving is quite stressful when I drove. Again, I have to plan every route. Everything has to be planned. Like, nothing is relaxed in my life whatsoever. And that's the stuff people don't see. I do have executive dysfunction issues. I didn't realize that's what it was, but I've disguised them so well with all these things that I've put into place, you know? I've had such a hard time over the years of people kind of criticizing me or calling me lazy or saying I'm dim or, you know, saying I'm ditzy. And actually, you know, I've made jokes of it because it's the easiest thing to do. But sometimes I feel so wounded inside because they've got me wrong. And again, I do feel I have a disability in some of these areas, but people just scoff at that. But these things were not easy for me. So for the rest of my colleagues, the idea of completely changing the whole plan, not having our meeting at school, you know, where our books were, having to suddenly get everything together, put them into a car, drive to a hospital, find a parking space, just didn't faze them. But for me, it just absolutely sent me into a spin and I got really upset. And my colleagues actually called me selfish and then gossiped about how over the top I was and how pathetic I was. And that was, again, it's actually making me emotional speaking about this now. This is what has happened throughout my whole life. I've just been totally misunderstood. And if I was so openly disabled, people wouldn't be expecting these things of me. If people really understood I was autistic and that, yes, I can be spontaneous and yes, I can do these things, but it really depends on the kind of day I'm having and the tolerance I have and how comfortable and confident I feel in certain things. And I've always been so ashamed of that. I've hidden it. And now I'm not ashamed of it because I now understand why I'm like it. I know I'm autistic and I know that these things are not good for me emotionally. They're not good for my mental health and that I have to have boundaries, but people don't like these boundaries. Now, at the time, I didn't know that I needed them. And again, would people please, but you know, things used to build up just like in children, you know, the children I talk about. These things build up. And on one day you might react differently to another, but this particular day, everything had obviously come to a head for me and I couldn't cope. And you know, this has just been my life story, really. So to say that things are so much easier for me because I'm so high functioning, it is something I will repeat time and time again. It's hurtful. It completely dismisses how difficult life actually is. And I'm trying to do this cautiously. It's not because of being autistic. You know, people would say, well, I bet you wish you could eradicate autism. I bet you wish you weren't autistic. Actually, there are so many gifts from being autistic that I love. I do love how my brain works. It is also a curse in some ways, but there's a lot of things about my being that I love. And although some of the sensory stuff, like the auditory stuff, is not pleasant for me, there's other stuff from the sensory aspect that I really enjoy. And like how much enjoyment I get from the world. And, you know, so I don't want to paint it as a negative thing, but sadly in this world it is kind of negative. But it's not actually, like, for example, that situation. You can say, oh, well, isn't being autistic such a drag? It wouldn't have been a drag if I hadn't been expected to do something that was outside of my comfort zone. Really, if their reaction had been, that's absolutely fine, do you mind if we still go to the meeting and you can maybe stay here and do your work and we'll catch up with you? I think what upset me was they were so desperate to rush to the hospital for this one individual, and they decided that amongst themselves, and I was supposed to just go along for the ride. And when I didn't do what they wanted me to do without question, I'm the bad guy. And I think that's what I've found really hard through my life. I always come across as this bad guy, and it's not purposely done, but that was just too much for me. They don't understand that, and to this day they don't understand that. And this is where you become ostracized and people create these ideas about you. And that's something I struggle to kind of not loop on, actually. I loop on these interactions. I loop on these failed interactions and situations. And like I said, some people might say, well, you should have just sucked it up and done it. But it's, I couldn't understand why everybody had to kind of be, why could we not have had this meeting at school as planned with me involved? You know, why was this other person being involved more important than me? Anyway, I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but I hope you kind of understand what I'm saying, because I don't want to sound like I'm being selfish. I'm just trying to explain that in this world, being autistic is tricky, and these are some of the reasons why. And this is coming from somebody who kind of blends in pretty well, but not consistently. I blend in well for a short time. So that's kind of my key, is if you want to blend in, just don't be out there very long. But if anything, do you know what I come across as? Really friendly. I'm like overly friendly. I'm a bit inappropriate. And I waffle and all those kinds of things. But some people find that really endearing. Some people find it really annoying. And some people have accused me of being false, because nobody can be that nice and chatty and bubbly. Not really. Behind your back, they must be saying this or doing this. You know, nobody's really like that. Actually, that's the real me. I am really, really friendly. I love talking to people. The reason that I avoid social interactions is because they don't love talking to me, and they give me the funny looks and they make me feel stupid. So then I loop on it and I shy away and I avoid the world. So actually, when I say all the time about how I don't like socializing, I would like socializing if maybe the reactions to me were different. But the only way the reactions to me are different is if I change myself. And I think it's really sad I have to change myself. The fact is, if I'm out and I hear a song I like, I want to sing and dance along to it, and it's not socially acceptable. So really, I can't be myself in this world around people. And you have to kind of pick and choose those people you can be yourself around. That's a horrible way to live, isn't it? Just to end with this, somebody said to me, but that's all people. Not everybody can just say and do what they want all of the time. And I do take that on board. You know, we all have these different masks and these different hats we put on in different places and settings. You know, you'll be different at home or at a party and at work. And I take that on board fully. But what it is the things that make me happy are, like I said, I love to play and dance and sing. And yeah, you just get accused of trying to be attention seeking or being weird, and then people tease you or they talk about you, and it's just easier just to not go out. It's much easier to just hide at home, and that's what I do. And if I'm really honest, it's quite sad that I have done that for most of my adult life, because the outside world is not a very accepting place. But now it's worse because it's not just me having to navigate this, it's my children. And that I find really, really tricky. I would like to revisit this again. And if anybody has anything they'd like to add, as always, please let me know. Thank you for listening.